past nine, 0330 80 55 55. A lot of reaction to Nolan Live, the television show. It was on BBC One last night. We're back for another series. Last night we were looking at the top of the show at how the Northern Ireland executive is going to tackle bread and butter issues here. The first debate was between the DUP minister, the executive minister, Paul Given, the opposition in the form of the SDLP MLA, Daniel McCrossan, and Doug Beattie from the Ulster Unionist Party. You can let us know what you thought of that debate last night, whether you think government are going to be able to deliver for you, whether the opposition are going to be able to take them on, hold them to account. Let's just hear some of what was said last night, starting with Paul Given addressing why his DUP colleague and economy minister, Simon Hamilton, won't tell us, he's only an economy minister, which way he voted on whether we should or should not remain in Europe.
I've never spoken to Simon about how he voted, but I'll tell
You've never spoken?
No, I haven't. Not about this issue.
Could you ring him now?
And ask him for
Go
you.
Go on, ring him now.
I'll tell you what Simon Hamilton will tell me. Whilst it may be interesting to journalists, what the decision was.
Scrap that, Paul.
Let me finish the point,
and then
Stephen.
I'll let you finish it.
Thank you. I'll tell
you how it might be interesting. For a government that's saying there's a new way of communicating to the people in Northern Ireland, how about being straight with them? How about actually telling people that one of the most important votes that they felt they've made in recent times, that our economy minister should be open and frank with them rather than dodging a question?
Well, what I want Simon Hamilton to do is to create more jobs in Northern Ireland, to create more investment in Northern Ireland. So I'll tell you what.
Does our economy minister believe we should remain in Europe?
Well, see, again, that's an academic question.
It's an academic question.
It's a question.
Whether our economy minister reckons we should remain in Europe.
It's irrelevant.
It's irrelevant.
I'll tell you why it's irrelevant. From May, 700 new jobs in Northern Ireland. Exports up 9.5% on last year, more than any region in the United Kingdom. In terms of manufacturing jobs, 3,000 created in the last 12 months. What do I want Simon Hamilton to do? To keep doing what he's doing and delivering on the jobs that matter to the people. Is that more important to Northern Ireland as opposed to the debate around what way someone voted or didn't vote? I would suggest it's about driving forward on economic issues.
Why did you just very effortlessly tell us how you voted?
Well, I voted Leave. I was always voting Leave. To me, we are better outside of the European
Union. Why is it not irrelevant? Why was your answer not, it's irrelevant?
Well, it's not a case of why is it not irrelevant. You asked me a question, I've gave you the answer.
Why, when people ask Simon Hamill a question, does he not give an answer?
Well, you can ask Simon why he won't give you a specific answer.
And he ducked it.
Again.
He ducked it. Look, he did this. Look. New way of communicating in Northern Ireland, Paul. Which way did you vote, Mr. Economy Minister, on the referendum? Ooh.
I think we can have a laugh about it if you want.
Very serious issue.
Well, it is serious. And now, like everybody else, irrespective of what position people took on the European referendum, the decision has been taken. Now you want to make sure Northern Ireland will get the best out of
Paul,
the negotiations.
That decision was taken by the public. It was taken to the public without the necessary information that your First Minister and the Deputy First Minister, who hid behind Ireland, hidden in the shadows. Oh, I can't tell anybody in case she puts me in bed early. You know, let's be honest about it. What was Martin afraid of? Martin is supposed to be the Joint First Minister, and he was afraid to release important information, the man that said, Stephen, that he was voting Remain. But he didn't tell us the truth, did he? Because that document revealed that the future for Northern Ireland would be very dark outside.
Actually, Martin McGuinness would argue that all the facts within that document that they revealed in public anyway during their debates. That's what Martin McGuinness would say. Guy up here, white shirt.
It doesn't really matter what we were told, because we did actually vote to remain in Northern Ireland, and that's not really talked about enough, I think, by the politicians.
It's about, if there's a new way of politics, you get the straight answer to a straight question. That's the point I'm making. Guy up here, orange shirt, go ahead.
I think if they stop wasting their money on the big balls at the falls and stuff like that, then they'd have more money for services.
Do you not like the balls in the falls?
Yeah, not really.
Why not?
Because it's a waste of money.
It's called art.
You could make it in your back garden.
Don't be.
I think, Stephen, there's a really important optic here that we're looking at, because facing me here is our government, and Paul is representing Sinn Féin today, and he is representing the DUP today. He is representing our government. So therefore, he's speaking for Sinn Féin today. And we're sitting here as the opposition, trying to put our point across.
So it's not your point, because you've got different points.
Well, we do have different points. But everybody's
not united.
We're trying to hold them to account. And the point that was made up there about, well, it doesn't really matter about how we voted in the referendum and this document being released. It's about transparency. Mm-hmm. It's about having a government who are transparent. And we've already seen that when they spent £100,000 using a royal prerogative to enlist the services of a media mogul, I think you know him, to help them sell a message. Now, they did that behind closed doors. There was no...
Is the Unionist Party got any press officers?
Oh, we have got press officers.
Have you?
Yes, we have.
But openly boarded, were they?
Yeah, absolutely, they were.
Special advisers, all openly boarded?
We've got absolutely no special advisers.
Well, you
no.
did when you were in government. Yeah. All openly boarded?
Yes.
Never self-appointed? By never chosen?
No, they were boarded. We had an open... appointments.
For your special advisers when you were in government?
For our special adviser.
Yeah.
Yes, we did. And we don't have any special advisers now. How many have you got, Paul? How many special advisers have you got?
Unfortunately.
How many have you got?
Unfortunately.
How many special advisers have you got, Paul?
Calm down, Doug.
Seriously?
We'll have the conversation if you can calm down.
Okay.
Doug doesn't clearly even understand
But you won't answer the question.
Let him answer.
How many special advisers?
Let him answer.
Give me the space. We'll have a conversation. I think the people of Northern Ireland are tired with the politics of constantly shouting over each other, so let's engage in a sensible way.
So do you say nothing at all?
So whenever it comes to special advisers, both the SDLP and the Ulster Unionists appointed special advisers. None of them went for any public appointment process. So don't sit now.
We didn't change the law, though, Paul.
And lecture
about
this issue.
We didn't sneak about and change the law and didn't tell anybody
Again,
about it.
This is typical of the opposition.
Or use royal powers.
The issue of the opposition has been, one, Mike Nesbitt, more interested in where the Ulster Unionists get to sit in the chamber, how a press secretary got appointed, and issues around Brexit to do with did Simon vote what way or the other.
That's not important.
So, but in terms of getting on with government business, I'll tell you what's important. 700 new jobs from May. In my own department, 280 coming from the Departments of Work and Pensions. Public realm schemes in Port Stewart over £1 million. The Irish Open coming to Northern Ireland. So while yous get on with talking about these minor issues around where you want to sit and storm it, Weller Colum Eastwood is the deputy to make. We'll get on with running the contract.
Okay. Give them a round of applause. Thank you very much indeed. Thank you.
So that's just some of last night. After every show, I get contacted by some of you saying, I really wanted to talk about that. So you can this morning, 0330 80 55 55. See your calls coming in now. Let's speak to the journalist Alex Kane first, who was watching last night's show. What did you make of that interaction between government, Alex, and the opposition?
Good morning, Stephen. The interesting thing is about the interaction between opposition and government. I think two things worth mentioning here. The opposition, as we could see there, and you made the point yourself, they don't agree on most things, to be honest. They didn't have a joint strategy for the opposition day on Monday. They didn't have a joint strategy when, I think, the Ulster Unionist Party unilaterally launched their vision for Northern Ireland outside the European Union. They didn't even discuss it with the SDLP. It would have had more impact had they done it together. What was also interesting about last night, and I think it's something we're going to see more and more of in the next few months, that the DUP... A DUP minister by himself represented the executive. I think we'll see that in future programmes where it might be a Sinn Féin minister. They are not going to put themselves in the position where you or any other journalist can say, oh, hang on, you've just disagreed with them. They're not going to do that. They are going to just say, we are the government, we speak as a government, we work as a government.
But they're two parties with very different policies on many issues.
And that's the key to this. That's why they've done that. I remember you and I had this conversation shortly after the election, when it became clear that there was going to be an opposition. And I remember you asking, what will the Sinn Féin and the DUP do now? And I said to you, my gut instinct, Stephen, is that they will play this, that they will maximise consensus, they will minimise the disagreement. And in being able to do that, they will not put themselves in positions where they are on the same programme, where anyone can pick holes. And that's what they're going to do.
Is that a good thing for Northern Ireland? Question one. And question two, are they going to suddenly, when they approach an election, divide again and start telling the electorate, keep the bogeyman out?
Well, two things. One, is it a good thing? In one sense, yes, Stephen, because for years I argued that the dysfunctional nature of the executive meant that you in succession would have a series of ministers from the sometimes at four or five parties at the one time, all disagreeing with what the other minister said, and how often you would bring me on or someone else to talk about this dysfunctional nature. It looks to me like the executive are trying to address this problem, partly because they've nowhere else to go. They've no one else to blame. In the previous executive, they go over to the SDLP's fault, or Alliance didn't play ball, or the Ulster Unionist Party leaked it. They can't do it. They have to be seen to be working together, even when we all know there's disagreement.
Is that a vote winner for them or a vote loser?
I think it may
How many DUP voters are comfortable with the DUP if this is what they're doing, getting closer to Sinn Féin and vice versa?
Yeah, I can understand this, even, but you can talk about whether the DUP voters are happy, whether Sinn Féin voters are happy. It's like, you know, if the truth is, if the DUP or Sinn Féin could push a button and the DUP would disappear from the executive, even just Sinn Féin, or vice versa, they would do it. They do not love each other. They have no particular respect. They don't particularly want to be in government together. But what they do want to be, the DUP wants to remain the top dog within unionism, Sinn Féin wants to remain the top dog within republicanism, and if that requires them to go through all the efforts and all the motions, it's why David Gordon was appointed. If that requires them to find a strategy and means of being seen to work together to minimise those differences. So people say, actually, the executive isn't fighting. The only fighting we saw yesterday was the DUP, or the UUP and SDLP not quite agreeing on things. What we saw was the executive going, well, we're working together. We're trying. You lot are snapping at each other.
Yeah, but whether we hear it or not, whether they close down some of the disagreement that they have between each other or not, Alex, we know that they don't agree on many of the big issues. Now, maybe so what? Maybe it's about them getting on with what they do agree with. But part of the functionality of this place is about how do we deal with the past, which they disagree on, is about corporation tax, which Sinn Féin's public position is still they don't know whether we're going to do it or not in terms of affordability. They will do it if it can be afforded. The DUP's position is it can be afforded, so there is no agreement on that. Look at selection within education. There's no agreement on that. The very status of this country as to whether Northern Ireland should remain should be part of the UK or not, well, we know that fundamental difference. And then Europe. You know, let's address this point. How has Simon Hamilton got himself into a situation where, as the economy minister, he's not prepared to tell us whether Northern Ireland should be part of Europe or not? Well, and he's ducking and he's diving?
Well, OK, you said three there. The first point, you're right, Stephen, all those are valid in the DUP and Sinn Féin. Massively disagree on all of those, and I've written about it, you and I have talked about it. What they're at this stage, I think, trying to do is address that reality, the reality that more and more people think, but you don't agree. So they're trying to find a way. I think what they'll try and do is find little things they agree on, bank those, maybe move on to the more difficult ones. The interesting thing about the Simon Hamilton issue and that whole Brexit briefing paper, at any stage, Stephen, at any stage, during, before, during or after the referendum, Sinn Féin could have made life extraordinarily difficult for the DUP. They could have leaked that. They could have put that document into the public domain. They chose not to do that. And my guess is that this is part of the new rapprochement between the DUP and Sinn Féin. They're doing their best not to give each other too much of a difficulty. And in terms of Simon Hamilton, and this is an intriguing one, I agree with you. Simon, by my reckoning, the paper, the Brexit paper, which is prepared by the OFDM's policy coordination, policy European planning, a European policy coordination committee, that was prepared in the spring of 2015. But my timeline would suggest somewhere February, March, April, that they were working on that. At that stage, Simon Hamilton was finance minister. Simon Hamilton, I presume, was aware of the contents of that document. The other thing is worth bearing in mind here. Arlene Foster was a minister at that stage. Simon Hamill, the minister, when that document came out, I would find it extraordinary if that document had not been seen by Simon Hamilton, had not been seen by Arlene Foster, had not been seen by the other DUP ministers. And yet, knowing that information, some agreement was made that this document was not going to see the light of day, not simply not going to see the light of day. I can understand the protocol. The protocol is that those briefing papers, if the two big parties, and it just happens to be Sinn Féin and DUP, don't agree that they made public, unless they agree together, they're not made public.
But it was
no
such...
Sorry, Stephen, the important point is there's no protocol, by my reckoning, for not allowing the other executive ministers to see those papers either. So the UUP, SDLP were also kept, deliberately kept in the dark. willingly by the TUP and Sinn Féin, who must Sinn Féin themselves, knowing what that document said, agreed not to let it go to the UUP, SDLP and Alliance, all of whom were pro-staying in the European
Union. And so we start asking ourselves why. And look, we all know how easily some political parties leak documents to the media, even if they're not supposed to. We all know that as journalists, how easily that happens. And that document, a lid was kept on it, while the population in Northern Ireland, and indeed elsewhere, were being asked to make what they were being told was a critical vote, a very important vote. And it's why I come back again, and I am going to continue banging on about this until we get an answer. You see, I think it is incredibly in the public interest that our economy minister, our current economy minister here in Northern Ireland, that we don't know if in his heart and soul he actually thinks we should be part of Europe. We don't know if he has fundamental disagreements with his party. We don't know if he sat down and voted for us to remain in Europe and he's not prepared to tell us. And then government's trying to tell us they're having an open conversation with all of us.
Okay,
well, why is Simon Hamilton hiding how he voted? And when's he going to come clean about it?
Well, first,
and until he does, this programme will continue to ask him.
I was going to say that you're absolutely right. I think it's an issue that's not going to go away for him. But here's the reality of this. Whichever way Simon voted in this, let's work on the assumption that he saw this document while he was the minister. Maybe he just left finance on the 11th of May, so I can't remember the exact date it was published, but he was certainly finance minister when the paper was being worked on. He would have been aware of it. So either he voted leave, knowing what that background document's saying, and you could argue ignored a document from his own, an internal policy unit of so-called experts inside the OAFDFM, who had also been briefing him, and they ignored all their advice. So you would say to him, fine, so you voted Simon, you voted to leave, knowing all of that, or else he voted remain, in which case the question becomes, oh, so you voted against party policy, why didn't you speak up against it? I agree with you, Stephen. He should have nailed this right at the beginning. It's why the DUP locked it down. They locked it down right at the beginning. As to the best of my knowledge, and maybe one of your phone ringer people will phone in and say, best of my knowledge, only one member of the DUP, who I think was a South Belfast member, actually came out and said, I'm not voting. I'm voting to stay in the European Union. I can't think of... I know a couple of DUP MLAs, so I'm pretty sure voted remain, but none of them came out. There was no discussion outside the DUP ranks about this. That's the problem for Simon. It's not this issue. And I know Simon. I've known him for years in the DUP. I like him very much. But I'll tell you, this issue is not going to go away because you're going to keep asking people like me. I'm writing about it tomorrow. Every other journalist is going to keep saying to him, Simon, whatever way you voted, had you seen that document... Did that document affect your vote, or did you ignore the document, or did you ignore DUP policy? He cannot escape answering this question.
John in Belfast. Morning, John.
Hello, Stephen. Stephen, Opposition Day at Stormont. You run the programme about housing in North Belfast, particularly that family who lives, basically living in squalor in 2016. Now, the SDLP were involved with that family. Why was that not their first question at Stormont? Because if it had been the other way around, could you imagine it was the official unionist in charge of housing or the SDLP in charge of housing? Sinn Féin and the DUP would have had a big argument in Stormont over that. Instead, we had to love in and it was all quiet. And I think that was another disgrace.
OK, thank you, Robert in Belfast. Morning, Robert.
Morning, Stephen. I'll tell you what it is, Stephen. I want to talk to you about the way you're on Stephen Hamilton regarding ducking and diving.
Yeah.
I think you're an expert in ducking and diving.
Why is that?
Well, let's see. Greg A. Campbell has been asking you for quite a while what your salary is.
Yes.
And you've ducked and dived that for ages, but, Stephen.
Do you want me to go over this again?
No, no way.
So the BBC does not permit me, the people who employ me, the BBC, do not permit me to tell you. When the BBC wants to publish my salary, I am completely happy and comfortable for them to do so. I will raise no objections, no objection whatsoever to the BBC publishing my salary. It is a matter for them.
Is Simon Hamilton not in the same position.
Well, is he? Well, is he? Well, let's hear it then. Has Arlene Foster prevented Simon Hamilton from telling us how he voted? The same Arlene Foster who stood up and said, this is how I'm going to vote in the referendum. This is how the rest of you should vote in the referendum. Other politicians telling us how to vote. And yet Simon Hamilton, our economy minister. Robert, why can't we? And then I'll shut up and listen to you. I get it.
It's a personal situation with
is it?
Simon Hamilton. Surely it's everybody's personal situation to be private in how they vote.
How is it a personal situation?
Can I ask you another
sure.
question?
Of course you can, yeah.
What political party do you vote for?
Well, you know, as a BBC presenter, I can't tell you that.
But then you're ducking and diving.
Isn't I'm you? Not ducking and diving.
You
it's
are.
A completely different situation when you have a politician and a political party, Robert.
But then
Who are advising
the
public?
You're on your normal ducking and diving when you're asked a direct question.
Okay, and
that's and you're calling. You're doing the same thing.
Let me try to respond to this like this.
Okay.
The DUP had a position. They had a political position on which way you should vote in the referendum, and they were advising you to leave Europe. Now, if you look at other political parties, what was happening, there was disagreement within political parties. There were you saw that play out. Take the Conservative Party as an example. You saw Boris Johnson take on the Prime Minister, David Cameron. You saw that played out in public. The public had a chance to watch both of those people, if you just even take just those two, articulate their arguments, listen to them, be influenced by them or not. Simon Hamilton's party was telling us to vote to leave the EU. What did he really think? How did he really vote? But what's much more important now, Robert, as our economy minister now, why did he vote as he did and has anything changed?
And I don't think it's fair for you to keep going on at Simon Hamilton and saying he's ducking and diving. Whatever choice he made, it was a personal choice and he made that choice. Now, did you vote Remain or leave yourself?
The BBC would not be comfortable with me telling
there
you that.
Again, you're ducking and diving. Three questions I've asked you, and each time you've done your normal ducking and diving, hiding behind the BBC.
I think you think you're being clever, and I'm completely comfortable with saying to
I'm
you...
I'm not being clever. I'm asking you direct questions, the same way you're asking of Simon Hamilton, the same way Mark...
But you're comparing apples with oranges.
No,
there is
I'm
nothing
not.
To
I'm
prevent...
Asking, I'm asking a direct question, and you're ducking and diving.
So what point do you not get that as a presenter on the BBC, you do not give your personal opinions, but as a politician in this country, you stand up in front of the electorate based on your personal opinions, your views,
judgment. No,
that's what you do when you're a politician.
No.
You say, this is who I am, this is what I believe in, do you want to vote for me?
Well, this particular issue with Simon Hamilton, it's a personal issue, okay?
No, it's not.
It is a personal issue.
So he has no, as the economy minister, he has no view as to, no public view
he's
as to the prosperity of this country in or outside of Europe?
He's allowed a personal view, so he has.
Is he?
Whatever that personal view is, that personal view should be private. Now, you're ducking and diving. Three questions have I asked you. Heading behind the BBC.
Robert, thank you very much. Norman and Bangor and June and Bambridge. Norman, morning to you.
Morning, Stephen. Stephen, I don't know why you're worrying about this document coming out, because Cameron and Osborne brought documents out saying that if we leave the EU, there'd be a world war, house prices would collapse, the country would fall into a deep recession, thousands of jobs would be lost.
This document, just to get you all across it in case you're not. So the Office of First and Deputy First Minister in 2015 commissioned a report on what the implications would be if Northern Ireland was not part of Europe anymore. That report was written. There were many critical aspects of that report which suggested that it would not be good for Northern Ireland to leave the European Union. And that was not shared with the executive. That was not shared with other ministers outside DUP and Sinn Féin. And Martin McGuinness has essentially hinted when he was speaking to Good Morning Ulster that he wasn't allowed to release the document because the DUP wouldn't let him.
But why should we believe the document, Stephen, when we're fed lies by Cameron and Osborne? So why are we going to believe this document? It's not a pack of lies.
Would you not have liked the choice to believe it or not yourself?
Because if you're going to feed people lies, you're going to influence what way they vote.
You're calling those documents that Cameron, et cetera, pumped out as lies. Of course, he would...
No more lies. Well, the CBI, the hedge funds are all saying that they were all wrong. The hedge funds are making massive profits now. Yeah. The country is...
Well, the new report that we're talking about, there's no suggestion it was lies. It was simply an opinion, an analysis that the Office of First and Deputy First Minister commissioned. June in Banbridge. Morning, June.
Good morning, Stephen.
Go ahead, June.
I was cross with you last night, getting on like a child bouncing up and down out of your chair. But I'll tell you something, it's nobody's business how anybody votes, regardless of who they are or what. You go into the wee ballot box, you sign your paper, you put it in the wee box, end off. Whose business is it? Like that other fella said before, the wee man there from Bangor. You duck and dive. You won't answer questions. You hide behind the BBC. Everything people ask you, oh, the BBC don't allow us this. Oh, the BBC wouldn't allow me. But I tell you something. If you want to answer a question, answer it.
So what happens then?
Or did you not, folks?
So what happens then? So what happens if I break the rules of the BBC, Jim? What happens?
No, but you said that they wouldn't be happy with you. Well, I have to learn to be happy. We'd all stand behind you, Stephen.
It doesn't matter if you stand behind me or not. I would be breaking a contract. Can I repeat again? If the BBC wants to publish my salary today...
No,
work away.
Salary.
Work away.
Not your salary.
No problem. I have no issue with it.
No, not your salary. How did you vote? Did you vote?
But you understand the way the BBC works and that the... June, this is pretty basic stuff. This is, I'm not trying to be patronising. The way it's set up in the BBC, all different presenters, I'm no more special, I'm given no more leniency than any of the rest of them. Every BBC presenter, David Dimbleby, Paxman's left now, Hugh Edwards, myself, Mark Crothers, whatever, the rule is that you do not disclose things like which way you voted, etc., etc., because of an attempt to be impartial as you can be. Now, that's a pretty basic stuff that most people know about the BBC, June.
Okay, well, at least I'm an honest man. He voted. Look, he could ring up and say, just to keep your mouth shut, Stephen, I voted leave or I voted not to leave. He could tell you anything. So what does it matter?
Well, the reason why it matters, surely, is you would want to be saying, and he's a very intelligent guy, by the way, right?
Mm-hmm.
Very intelligent guy. You would want to be saying to Simon, well, look, so you voted. Let's hypothesise that he voted Remain. We don't know. But let's have a think, June, that while his party was telling us that it would be, Northern Ireland would be a much more prosperous place if we left Europe, that actually a guy who was a health minister... So he was seeing the brief there and the implications, and there are implications if we remain or leave Europe for health. He's now the economy minister. Obviously, there are implications if we remain or leave, and we're going to leave. That's what the referendum decided in terms of our economy. If Simon Hamilton were to come public and say, look, I voted remain, you would want to have a decent, proper conversation with him to say, well, look, why did you? What were you worried about? And given your worries at the time, now, okay, we're leaving. What's changed? Has it alleviated any of your fears, Simon? You are our economy minister. Are you worried about the way the vote's gone? How are we trying to offset some of those fears you're having? And at the end of the day, June, that's an open conversation that we kind of expect to have with our politicians, is it not?
Well, what if he voted to stay?
Well, what if what?
Or to leave. What if he decided that he was leaving?
Well, precisely. But we don't know.
Why worry about it? Was his vote going to make any difference?
June, thank you. Know what I mean? Back to the dental story we brought you yesterday, the story of little six-year-old Conla, who is still in pain. She's waiting for dental surgery. Just to re-emphasise some of the facts behind this story. So she has never been waiting 8 months for surgery. She was told she would have to wait 8 months for surgery recently. And after the Nolan Show got involved, that 8 month line was changed to 8 weeks. Now, her mother revealed on the Nolan television show last night that that dental surgery is only once a week. I don't know if it is or it isn't. And indeed, that she's been told that she may have to wait longer than 8 weeks. So those are just some of the facts behind it. What we do know is she needs emergency dental treatment. We do know that she's in constant pain. She's 6 years of age, West Belfast, and has been suffering from severe mouth abscesses for the last 12 months.
Aching and not good at all.
And what about school?
I can't do my work properly because I'm not tired and my mouth is that aching because I can't sleep at night.
And how sore does it get?
Really, really sore. I would just like them to put me to sleep and get my teeth out.
And how happy would that make you?
Happy because my abscesses would be away and there would nothing to be wrong with me anymore.
So we promise that we will stay across that story for you and.